As you know, after the service, we have lunch. And after lunch, we have a discussion group. It started out discussing the spiritual life and then the Christian life, one being your relationship with the Lord and the other being relationship with other Christians. And they ran out of material, and so they decided to start discussing my sermons. If you haven't been to this discussion class, we call it the APP class, standing for Applying Practical Principles. From the very beginning, it was Tally's idea, I chose not to go. That was because I wanted them to discuss this without me being there. After all, the Bible says you're to minister to one another, not just me minister to you. And that has worked out very well. Apparently, Joe and Tally write out questions, discussion questions. And I've never seen them until last week. And I was chatting with Joe, and he gave me a copy of the questions that were being discussed. Now, I have been speaking in the book of Proverbs, and I was talking about the fool. And so this was one of many questions that Joe came up with for last week. Quote, every family and workplace has one. A screwed up, dumberhead, buffoon, clown, nitwit. In a word, a fool. How should we deal with such fools in our life? Is it possible to guide fools out of their folly? And I looked at that and thought, my first response to Joe was, man, that's good stuff. I'm going to use that. I hadn't thought of buffoon and nitwit. Those are apt words to describe this fool we've been talking about. But the real point was that Joe constructed questions that are the logical conclusion of the discussion of the fool. Two very logical questions is, how should you respond to a fool? And more importantly, perhaps, what would you tell the fool? Now, just so happens that is exactly what I had planned to speak on this week. Joe got ahead of me. So let's review for a minute. I've been taking the topics in Proverbs and going through them. And so far, we've only looked at one or two. We looked at the Lord in the book of Proverbs. And then I talked about the wise person. And then after that, the fool. Now, let me tell you, just by way of review, what we concluded about the fool, which was last time. Fools reject God. They hate and despise wisdom. They think they are wise. They trust themselves. They say what they think, speak foolish things and perverse things, mock sin, spread slander, provoke strife, do not control their temper, act foolishly, sin, and as a result, they cause pain to their parents and anybody else who has to deal with them. You know anybody like that? Who doesn't? Seems like there's one in every family. Probably one in every workplace. Now the questions are, how do you respond to that? And what would you tell the person directly? Those are the two things I want us to talk about today. Now, what's going on is this. I took all the references to the fool in the book of Proverbs, and I tried to organize them. Last time, I described the fool and the result. And then I had all these other verses, and as I looked at them, it seemed to me that they very logically fell into two classifications, two categories. In one set, it was telling us how to respond to this person. And the second group was telling us what we would say to the fool directly. So that's what we're going to do. This sermon only has 2 points. Can you imagine me preaching a sermon with only 2 points? This one only has 2 points. All right. The first one is, what advice would you give to somebody who had to deal with the fool? Turn to Proverbs chapter 29. Proverbs chapter 29. These are two proverbs that have fascinated me for many, many years. Proverbs 29, and look at verse 4. Proverbs 29, verse 4. I'm sorry, 26. I said 29, I should have said 26. Proverbs 26, verse 4. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. I remember somebody telling me once, didn't the Bible contradict itself? And this is an illustration. I mean, one time, one verse it says, answer him. The next verse says, don't. How do you handle that? Well, these are not contradictory. They're complementary. The second phrase in each case explains the first phrase. For example, verse 4, do not answer a fool according to his folly, if that means you're going to become like him. So that's when you don't answer him. Look at verse 5. But you should answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. In other words, there is a time when you should answer a fool, and there's a time when you should not. Now let me talk about those two things for a second. Do not answer a fool according to his folly if you end up being a fool yourself. So what does a fool do? Well, I just gave you the list. Don't be like the fool in the kinds of things that I mentioned, like spreading slander or provoking strife. Or someone has suggested, looking at this verse, don't lose your temper or behave rudely or speak unadvisedly. But don't be a fool when you answer a fool. I heard a story once of a truck driver who saw a sign that said low bridge. And before he knew it, he was under the bridge and he got stuck. This was a great illustration of answer a fool according to his folly. Shortly, a policeman came along. He walked up to the truck, put his hands on his hips, and he said, stuck, huh? And the truck driver said, no, I was hauling a bridge and ran out of gas. Now, that's answering a fool according to his folly. But it says that we should answer a fool according to his folly, but don't answer a fool lest he be wise. I got this backwards. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own foolishness. So there comes a time, I think, when you should answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise. There's a passage of scripture that says in John chapter 10, it says this, I give unto them eternal life, and they shall never perish, neither shall any man pluck them out of my hand. It's John 10:29. You've heard the verse, right? Well, there are people who believe you can lose your salvation. But this verse says, nobody's going to pluck you out of my hand. So then they come up with something real sarcastic, and they say, well, yeah, but you could jump out. So the answer to that is, no, you can't, because you're part of the body. Now that's answering a fool according to his folly, so that he not be wise in his own foolishness. All right, there are times when you just shouldn't even answer them. Just don't, especially if you're going to become like them. There's more. Matter of fact, there, as I looked at the book of Proverbs pertaining to this, it seems to me that there are seven different things Solomon says. For example, the next thing he says, in essence, is don't argue with them. That's in Proverbs 29, got ahead of myself a minute ago, verse 9. And it says, if a wise man contends with a foolish man, Neither the fool rages or laughs. There is no peace. The Hebrew word translated contends means to enter into a controversy. So the idea here is that you don't argue with a fool. By the way, you got your Bibles open to 29:6. Do you see the word fool is in italics? Do you see that? What does that mean? It's not in the Hebrew text. So some scholars say that maybe we should supply the word wise. And then it would read, if a wise man contends with a fool, whether the wise rages or laughs, there is no peace. And the idea would be, whether the wise man is severe or humorous, it doesn't make any difference. Nothing is going to work. The more common suggestion, as with the New King James Translation that I'm reading from, is to supply the word fool in there. If that is the case, the idea is don't enter into controversy with the fool because they're not going to listen to reason. They're not going to yield to any arguments you give. They will either rage or laugh, neither of which is going to change what they think. They will laugh you to scorn, or they will have an ungoverned temper, but it's not going to make any difference. Here's the point. There are times when you don't answer a fool, but for certain, don't argue. Don't enter into a controversy with a fool. It's not going to work. When I was in college, I knew a fella named Dave. Now, the college we went to was a Baptist college. And we got out, and I lost contact with him until a few years ago. And somehow, because of Facebook or email or something, we got in contact with each other. I have a Facebook page, and I look at it once every 6 months, whether I need to or not. And I don't know, somehow we got in contact with each other. And in the course of that, I discovered that he'd become the pastor of a Baptist church, and he had decided that you needed to be baptized in order to be saved, and had convinced his whole church of that and had rebaptized them all for the remission of sins. What? I was horrified. So I couldn't let that pass. So I simply wrote him back and said, well, the Bible clearly teaches that salvation is by grace through faith. John 3:16, Ephesians 2:8 and 9, for by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It's a gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. Now, have you ever talked to anybody that believed this? This isn't as common in Southern California as it is in the South, where I grew up. And they're all over the place. And they always land on Acts 2:38. Repent and be baptized for the remission of sins. Ever had anybody tell you that? Some of you are shaking your heads. What do you do with that? Well, that's a problem. But the issue is that the little word for in English and in Greek can mean one of two things. It can mean in order to get or because I got. Let me illustrate. He went to the store for milk. That's for, in order to get. He was executed for murder. Did he get executed to get murder? No, he executed because he murdered. And that's the problem with Acts 2:38. Which is it? Is it you get baptized because you've received the remission of sins, or in order to get the remission of sins? And that's the problem. So, what happens is, if you believe that you got to be baptized to be saved, you hightail it to all the verses on baptism, which, by the way, is a problem. But be that as it may, if you don't believe that you need to be baptized for the forgiveness of sins, you hightail it to all the verses on faith, like I just did. Yeah. And so you're at loggerheads. So he quotes his verses, and I quote my verses. Now, there's an answer to this little controversy, and that is, who's speaking in Acts 2:38? Peter. It's on the day of Pentecost. And who recorded what Peter said? Luke. Okay? So what we really need is to either resurrect Luke or resurrect Peter. So if I could resurrect Luke over here and say, would you clarify which one you meant? Or better yet, if I could resurrect Peter. Well, I don't have that power, so it's not going to happen, right? So what I really need is for Peter to clarify this and for Luke to record it. And he does. In Acts chapter 10, Peter is preaching at Cornelius' house, and he says right in the middle of the sermon, and all that believe will have the forgiveness of sins. And bam, those who were listening believed right in the middle of the sermon. They didn't even give Peter a chance to finish the sermon. They believed. And Peter says, can we forbid water to baptize them? So did the baptism become after salvation, or was the baptism in order to get salvation? According to Peter in Acts chapter 10, it was because he got, not in order to get. That solves Acts 2:38, right? Not if you're talking to somebody who believes that Acts 2:38 is teaching that you got to be baptized to get the remission of sins. So I gave him all of that and a whole lot more, and he just would go back to that verse. Now, this is when I knew him, he was a great guy. He's a nice fella. And I looked at that and said, the Bible tells me in 2 Timothy, the servant of the Lord must not strive. And I just quit talking to him. I just said, this is getting me nowhere, it's getting you nowhere, we just need to stop this. Now, that's what Solomon has said. If you meet a fool, don't try to argue with them, because it isn't going to do you any good, it's not going to do them any good. It's just not going to work. Next suggestion, don't give them wisdom either. Oh, then I won't argue with them, I'll just give them wisdom. That ain't going to work either. Proverbs 23 verse 9 says, do not speak in the hearing of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of your words. Wow. Now, he's not talking about the fool overhearing what you said. He's talking about speaking directly to the fool, and he says, don't do it. Why? Well, he's not only going to refuse the wisdom, he's going to despise it. One commentator said, don't try to teach a dull. By the way, I'm quoting somebody else, all right? He said, so don't try to teach a dull, stupid fool. I didn't say that, he did. But the Hebrew word fool means stupid. All right? This commentator said, do not teach a dull, stupid fool, you're wasting your time. Mm-hmm. And that is precisely what Solomon is saying. Another said, trying to teach a thick-headed, stubborn fool is useless. Or how about Jesus? In Matthew chapter 7, verse 6, he said, do not give what is holy to dogs, nor cast your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn and tear you in pieces. Whoa. Now, there are several proverbs that say something similar to this. Don't give wisdom to a fool. Another one that says the same thing is 26:7. Like the legs of a lame that hang limp is the proverb in the mouth of a fool. All right, what a vivid image. Yes. So you got a lame leg, which means you can't stand on it. So it says giving wisdom to a fool is like a lame leg that just hangs there. In other words, that lame leg isn't useful for anything, and giving a fool wisdom isn't going to work because it just is useless. So he says, don't do it. It's useless. Or another proverb saying the same thing about giving wisdom to a fool is 26 verse 9. Like a thorn that goes into the hand of a drunkard is a proverb in the mouth of a fool. And the idea is that you give a fool wisdom, in the first place it's useless, it isn't going to work, in the second place it could be dangerous. It's like a drunk that doesn't know what he's doing and he cuts himself with a knife, or in this case a thorn. He'll misuse and the proverb and even wound and grieve other people. He'll justify his stupidity. He'll draw conclusions that weren't there. So the whole point is, don't give wisdom to a fool. It's useless and could be dangerous. The third thing he says is, don't correct them. That's in Proverbs 16:22. Understanding is a wellspring of life to him who has it, but the correction of fools is folly. The correction of fools is folly. In other words, same thing. Don't correct them because it's not going to work. They are not going to learn from correction. You know anybody like that? You ever tried to correct somebody and they didn't get it? That's what Solomon is saying. Don't honor them is his advice. That's 26 verse 8. Like one who binds a stone in a sling, he who gives honor to a fool. What a vivid metaphor. When I was a kid, I had a sling. I don't think anybody, I haven't heard anybody talk about a sling in years. Yeah, slingshot, right. And so Solomon says it's like having super glue and you glue the stone to the slingshot. And so it ain't going to go anywhere. Now that's what he's saying. That's what it's like to give understanding. That can be a wellspring to some people. But if you give honor to a fool, it's just like the stone hanging in the slingshot. It's not going to go anywhere and it's not going to work. It's just not going to work. It's senseless. It's absurd. So don't give honor to a fool. 26:1 says something similar. Snow in the summer and rain in the harvest, so honor is not fitting for a fool. Just like snow in the summer is contrary to nature. It's out of place. It's unsuitable. It's inappropriate. So giving honor to a fool is like that. It's inappropriate. It's just like snow in summer or rain in the midst of a harvest. That's the last thing you want if you're trying to harvest a crop. How are we doing? Getting the message? These people aren't going to learn. Next, do not be a friend to them. Whoa. Listen to Proverbs 14, verse 7. Go from the presence of a fool, a foolish man. When you do not perceive in him the lips of knowledge. And while we're at it, 13:20 says, he who walks with the wise will be wise, but the companions of fools will be destroyed. This is heavy stuff. Let me go back to 14 verse 7 for a second. Go from the presence of a fool. I'm saying, don't be their friend. Because your associations can influence you for good or bad. Someone commenting on that verse said, "Never associate with a vain, empty fellow when you perceive that he can neither convey nor receive instruction." Now, I want to clarify something here. The Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians 15:33 says, "Be not deceived, evil company corrupts good manners." So be careful who you allow to be your friends. When I first started out in ministry after I graduated from seminary, I was a youth speaker. And one of the things I did was develop some messages on Proverbs, because that's one of the places in the Bible that it speaks directly to young people. Matter of fact, at one point, I did a series of messages at a camp, and I just went through Proverbs chapter 1. Fascinating. The first thing he says after the introduction of Proverbs is, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge." And then chapter 9, verse 10, he says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom." And as I've pointed out, knowledge and wisdom are synonyms in the book of Proverbs. So the first thing you need to do is have a relationship with the Lord. The next thing he says is, listen to your parents. By the way, that's a fascinating verse. He says, listen to the law of your mother. Ooh. There's a law of God. That's the Ten Commandments and more. There's the law of government. And then there's the law of mother. And Proverbs says, listen to the law of mother. Then, the third thing he says, listen to the Lord, have a relationship with him, listen to your parents. And then he says, and be careful who you're friends with. And he goes on and on and on. But the point of that passage in the first chapter of Proverbs, if you look at it carefully, is don't be companions, a companion with fools, if they're going to lead you into sin. And he talks in detail about what that might look like. Now, that passage has been very helpful to me in not only talking to young people, but just in general. And here's the problem. I've just stood up here and said, don't be friends with a fool. That your relationship but the person can affect your morals and conduct. But doesn't the Bible say that Jesus was a friend of sinners? And aren't we supposed to be Christ-like? Didn't he eat with publicans and sinners? And how do you put these two things together? And by the way, the Bible's full of this kind of stuff, and you have to sort it all out. Well, here's what I have decided. I think the line of demarcation is this. You should be friends of sinners as long as they are not influencing you. And you are influencing them. So, to put this in perspective, Solomon says, go from the presence of foolish men, a foolish man, when you do not perceive in him the lips of knowledge. And I think he would say, based on chapter 1, especially when they start influencing you and you are not influencing them. That's the critical issue. Be careful. But he also says, as I pointed out in 13 verse 20, that if you walk with a wise man, you will be wise. And the companions of fools, I would expect him to say would be foolish, right? But that isn't what he says. In that verse, he says, you will be destroyed. So you need to put these two things together. You will not only be like them, but once you go down the path of a fool, you're going to end up where fools end up, which he says is destruction. You ever heard the expression, a man is known by the company he keeps? Well, Solomon would say, you're not only going to be like him, but you're going to end up damaged, destroyed. So, You need to be careful about your associations. Don't be friends with a fool, especially if they're influencing you and you are not influencing them. All right. How are we doing? You gonna remember all this? Let me summarize what I've said so far. Do not answer them. Do not argue with them. Do not give them wisdom. Do not correct them. Do not honor them. And don't become their friends. Pretty negative stuff, right?
Yes.
Now, one more. What's it going to take? Do you know anybody that's really made bad decisions and you shook your head and said, what's it going to take? Boy, I know people like that. I know people like that right now. As a pastor, I've talked to many, and they just keep doing it. And you just shake your head and say, what's it going to take? Well, Solomon tells us, you ready for this? This is the seventh thing he says you should do in you dealing with them. Don't answer them. Don't argue with them. Don't give them wisdom. Don't correct them. Don't give them honor. Don't be their friends. Because what they are going to need is some external force. Proverbs 26, verse 3. A whip for a horse, a bridle for a donkey, and a rod for the fool's back. All right. Either had to have lived in the ancient world when they didn't have cars and planes and trains, or you need to grow up on a farm to really appreciate this. A whip for a horse. How do you get the horse to move? A bridle for a donkey. How do you control a donkey? Bridle and a whip. Those are external forces. You see, dumb animals don't have the capacity to respond to instruction. So the only way you can control a dumb animal, in this case, is to use some external force to get them to obey. Psalm 32, verse 9 says, do not be like a horse or a mule, which have no understanding, which must be harnessed with a bit and bridle, lest they come near to you. That just really says it all. Psalm 32, verse 9. That is, don't be like a dumb horse or donkey, because they don't have understanding. They need external force. So brute beasts have no internal motivation. Therefore, they need external motivation. Or as someone has said, nothing else can bring him to his senses or drive his folly from his heart. Wow. You know, I concluded a number of years ago, I did everything I could do. I told you everything I know to do. Maybe you need another counselor because you've exhausted my knowledge, my wisdom. But you've already been to three others, you know? So what do you do? Nothing. You back off. You let them go. Because why? They're headed for destruction. I just mentioned that a minute ago. So wait until they crash and be in the wings, so maybe then you can help them. They're going to have to crash and burn. And some people don't get it even when that happens. But the point Solomon is making at this juncture is, you can help them. Only external force will help them. Like a whip on a horse or a bridle on a donkey. Then he says in 17:10, rebuke is more effective for a wise man than 100 blows for a fool.
Wow.
Now, let me explain how severe this is. According to the Mosaic law in Deuteronomy chapter 25, verses 2 and 3, you were to not whip anybody more than 40 times. There was a limit on the number of lashes you could give a criminal. The limitation was 40. So to say 100, wow, 100 blows to a fool is saying it's going to take severe physical punishment for some people to come around. Severe punishment is not effective on fools. They just don't get it. It's hard for them to think that they're wrong. They're convinced that they are smart and they know more than everybody else. So, add that to the list. Do not answer, do not argue, do not give wisdom, do not correct them, do not honor them, do not become their friend, because it's going to take external physical force for them to get the message in some cases. And there's nothing you can do. Matter of fact, there's some kinds, there are cases where there's nothing God can do. Do you know that? Jesus said, I can't do anything here. There's no faith. They don't believe me. I can't work unless they believe me. And I, by the way, this has been a very hard lesson for me to learn. When I was much younger, if I was trying to help somebody, I wouldn't turn loose for love nor money. I'd hang on even to the point it was absurdum. As a matter of fact, I got severely rebuked one day when a fellow said to me, Mike, you spend too much time with black sheep. What? Yeah, you ought to spend more time with white sheep. I'd be accused of racism to have said that today. All right, what he meant was, the Bible tells you to go disciple people. So you can go after the one that goes astray, but you spend too much time going after the strays. Some strays ain't coming back. So spend more time discipling people than going after strays. Now, there's a place for both. But there needs to be a balance in here. So this is hard for me. But I finally came to the conclusion one day that some people you just can't help. They're not going to hear you no matter what you say to them. And you're just wasting your time. Dr. Johnson, the famous literary figure, was talking with some of his friends one day when all of a sudden he said to them, let us be silent. A fool is coming. Let us be silent. A fool is coming. Now, all I've done so far is tell you how to respond to a fool. What would you say to the fool? I ended last time saying, there's not a lot of hope for a fool. Is there any hope at all? And this makes it sound even worse. You're not to befriend them. You're not to give them wisdom. You're not to honor them. Is there any hope? What would you say to the fool? All right, I have three suggestions. I'm not talking to the fool directly. All right? Number one, you need to realize you have a need. Proverbs 8:5 says, oh, you simple ones, understand prudence, and you fools, be of an understanding heart. Solomon says directly to the fool, be of an understanding heart. Get it. Matter of fact, he says, some people get it, and some people just don't get it. I think that behind this proverb is the idea that you have a need. Somebody has said, you're not a fool because you have done something foolish, if only if the folly escaped you. Right. So realize you have a need. Another said something similar about the Pharisees. By the way, it ever occurred to you, why did the Pharisees not get it? I mean, Jesus comes and he's working miracles. I mean, obviously supernatural stuff. And the people get it. And in Matthew chapter 9, verse 34, it says, the Pharisees said, oh, he cast out demons by the ruler of the demons. They thought he was in some kind of league with the devil. Why didn't they get it? I think this is a complicated question. I think there are all kinds of answers to this, by the way. I don't think it's a simple little thing. However, I remember when I was teaching the book of Matthew and I was going through it, it hit me one day. Oh, I get it. These people are just plain stupid. I mean, you know. One commentator commenting on the Pharisees said that the Pharisees were too set in their ways to change, too proud in their self-satisfaction to submit, too prejudiced to see who Jesus really was. They saw no need to change and hated anyone who wished them to change. So what you need to say to a fool is, you have a problem. You have a need. Hear me. So you say that to them. Might not do any good, but that's what you do. Second thing you say to a fool, you have a need. And secondly, you need to seek wisdom. Proverbs 1:22 talk about Lady Wisdom, who is talking to the simpleton, the scorners, and the fool. Then verse 23 says, turn at my reproof. Lady Wisdom is talking. Surely I will pour out my spirit upon you. I will make my words known to you. So the point is, get wisdom. You have a need for wisdom, and you just flat out tell them, you need wisdom. I have one more suggestion. No, Solomon has one more suggestion. And that is, consider the consequences. By the way, this is a powerful little thing, especially for young people. You need to think about the consequences. Proverbs 14:24 says, the crown of the wise is their riches, but the foolishness of fools is their folly. The foolishness of fools is their folly. The consequences of their foolishness is their folly. They have nothing to show for their folly but their foolishness. 1:32 says, for the turning away of the simple will slay them, and the contemplation of fools will destroy, the complacency of fools will destroy them. All right, so if you keep going down this line, you're going to be destroyed. You're headed for destruction. You're going to commit suicide. Your own decisions are going to destroy you. 3:35 says, the wise shall inherit glory, but the shame shall be the legacy of fools. So what's your end? Folly? Destruction? Shame? Disgrace? The destiny of a fool is shame. One more. 19:29. Judgment. Judgments are prepared for scoffers and the beating for the backs of fools. By the way, the Hebrew word here used for judgments is only used of the judgment of God. That's where you're headed. So you need to consider the consequences. I heard of a father once who wanted to teach his kids not to drink. So he put them in the car and he took them to Skid Row and said, now, I think there's some differences today than there was back in the day he did this. Back in those days, virtually everybody in Skid Row was an alcoholic. And he showed them you know, laying down on the street. He said, you see that? That's where drinking will take you. Or I know of a mother who passed a strawberry field, and they were picking strawberries or some out in the field. And she said, you got to go to college. You got to get education, because if you don't, that's what you're going to end up with. You're going to end up with manual labor picking strawberries. The point being, show people the consequence. You keep going down this road, and this is what's going to happen. What's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again? Expecting a different result? That's what fools do. So somebody needs to sit them down and say, consider the consequences. Somebody, I think it might have been Larry, gave me a cartoon once and showed a counselor talking to somebody, and the caption was, one slap therapy. You need to, somebody to, Kathleen said it was her, not Larry. All right, somebody needs just to sit you down and slap you and say, look out what you're doing. Look where you're headed. You're headed for a cliff, and that cliff is going to bring you to destruction and the judgment of God. Stop! So, one thing you can tell a fool is consider the consequences. All right, I want to sum all this up. The book of Proverbs tells people what not to do with fools, and it tells what you should say to fools. They need wisdom. They should seek it. But they really should consider the consequences. As a matter of fact, as I looked over all this and thought about it, I thought maybe, just maybe, that last point is the point of all of this. That you should consider the consequences. When you are dealing with a fool, consider the consequences. It isn't going to work. And when you're talking to a fool, point out that what they're doing isn't going to work. And so you can sum all that up by saying, consider the consequences. Now let me talk about that for a second. In this series so far, I've pointed out that life is full of choices, and choices have consequences. Did you write that down? Matter of fact, as I've studied Proverbs, I've concluded that is a major thing Solomon is trying to teach. I have taken the Proverbs and I've isolated the fool and the wise and a number of others we're going to talk about, like the righteous and the wicked and the simpleton and the scoffer and the lazy. We're going to talk about all those people. But it dawned on me one day that in the way Solomon did it, he put them both in the same verse. The wise does this and the fool does this. The wise does this and the fool does this. The wise does this and the fool. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'm not handling this like Solomon wrote it. Why did he do it like that? And I concluded because he's saying, look, young man, you have a choice. Mm-hmm. You can either be wise or you can be stupid. You can either be righteous or you can be wicked. That, I think, is one of the major lessons of the whole book of Proverbs. And then I added that life is full of choices. You can make choices, but you have no control over consequences. So the first lesson is life is full of choices and choices have consequences. The second lesson is you can control the choices, but you can't control the consequences. So now I'm going to give you a third big, broad lesson concerning Proverbs. Consider the consequences. If you can't control them, consider the consequences. And I think that's what fools need to do, and I think that's what people who deal with fools need to do. They need to consider the consequences. Let me illustrate. Writing pens are a very critical part of my life. I never leave home without one. If I don't have a jacket on, it's in my shirt pocket. If I have a jacket on, it's in the jacket pocket. There's a spare in the car. There's laying around my desk, two or three. I always have a pen. And the reason is this. If I'm studying something, it's usually after I'm away from my desk studying that it'll dawn on me, oh, yeah. And I've learned if I don't write it down, I forget it. As a matter of fact, a lot of times that happens to me in the shower. Patricia calls that my think tank. She even bought me a pad where I could write in the shower. So writing instruments are very, very important. But writing instruments are a problem for me. I don't know what it is, but I have a couple of gifts. And one of them is that when I turn on a TV set, a commercial will be on. I'm gifted at this. I'm gifted. I thought if I could make money wagering, I could make a lot of money. But I'm also gifted at losing pens. I lose them right, and I don't know how I do it, but I get a favorite pen and I'll lose it every time. Now, I considered the consequences and I chose to buy cheap pens. Okay? And then I discovered there are two kinds of cheap pens. One has a cap. So, I have a box full of these that my dear wife bought for me because she knows how important pens are to me. I lose the cap. So I've discovered there's a second kind of pen. It has a little push button at the top. That's my favorite kind of cheap pen. Now some, you get the pen by twisting them. It's too much work. Just, okay? Now, here's what's going on. I considered the consequences, and I chose to buy this type of pen instead of this type of pen. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. All right. I would like to suggest that contemplating the consequences is a wise way to live your life. If you're dealing with a fool, and especially if you are one. Got it? Yes. Consider the consequences. Father, thank you for your wisdom. Now grant us the grace to remember, to live by your word and the wisdom that's in it. Indelibly impress this upon our hearts and our minds. In Jesus' name. Amen.